And welcome to Bridget Christie Minds the Gap. The first radio comedy show about feminism to be commissioned in the entire history of radio comedy. And after reading all my scripts, the BBC commissioning department have just informed me that it is also the last. They gave me 2 months to write the series, not very long, especially considering I've got kids. Rome wasn't built in a day, you know. It could have been if Romulus had introduced affordable childcare and equal pay. Did you know, in ancient Rome, it was perfectly legal to force slave women to work as unpaid prostitutes? Of course, Italy has a much more progressive attitude towards its women nowadays. I wanted to have gender-blind casting in this series and use a woman to play all the men's parts, but Radio 4 wouldn't let me. They said I was only allowed to do a comedy show about feminism if there was a man in it to provide all the comedy. So I wanted to get a man who was clearly a supporter of women and whose own personal politics sat comfortably with the show. I asked for Vladimir Putin or Cardinal Ratzinger. But they both declined. What I got instead was one of the funniest Scottish men comedians, over 50 working today. But then all the other ones have taken the day off. He's a man, but he's still funny, and he's an accountancy graduate from the University of Dundee. It's Fred McCauley! Fred, I am so happy that we managed to get a man who was so clued up on current British feminism. Tell me, what did you think of the recent spat between some of our most prominent feminist writers and the trans community?
Well, Bridget, I think you'll find when ladies have these kinds of arguments, there's usually a man involved somewhere.
Yes, thanks for that insight, Fred. So, this week we're looking at women's bodies, literally. Fred and I are literally looking at loads of women's naked bodies. We thought it would be fun if Fred and I played Guess Who's Had Cosmetic Surgery. So, Fred, you know the rules, don't you? Instead of questions like, is your mystery woman wearing a hat? It's, has your mystery woman had bottom implants?
Right. Crikey. It's warm in here, isn't it, Bridget? I might have to take my scarf off.
Now, ladies, I think you all look lovely, like the original M&S Every Woman underwear campaign that they scrapped. In favour of the much less realistic but far more marketable Some Women underwear campaign, featuring at least two different types of women who fall within their very strict and narrow age and size restrictions. The M&S Every Woman campaign offended some women, right, who rightly pointed out that some women were over 45 or a size 16. The hideous freaks! Now, if there are any women listening who are bigger than a size 16, I'm sorry, but Marks & Spencer's underwear isn't for you. You'll just have to get it from somewhere that caters for the larger form, like America. And if you're over the age of 45, try a museum. I wasn't actually offended by the campaign. I just thought it was a bit patronising and cynical. Plus, their strapline was rubbish.
These are not just any normal real women. These are M&S normal real women.
We're not chickens. They make it sound like they've reared their own women.
Our organic, corn-fed women roamed freely on a farm in Gloucestershire. Fair trade.
Also, right, if you're going to pretend to represent real women, you need to really go for it, right? Show our cellulite and our stretch marks. Show us eating baked beans out of a tin whilst crying at one born every minute. That's what us real normal women do. Isn't it? Anyway, they've scrapped that underwear campaign now. They have a new one featuring the womanly UK size 6, 25-year-old supermodel Rosie Huntington-Whiteley, posing on a bed in a push-up bra, reading the latest Fawcett Society newsletter with her finger between her lips and frowning. That'll teach her to put it in her mouth after she's just dewormed the cat. Please, M&S, don't pretend to care about us. As we love your tiny chocolate mousses that come with tiny, tiny fake silver disposable spoons for a pound. Oh, they're so cute! But patronise us again and we'll just go to Waitrose. Also, tell your media agency not to put your massive posters of naked women on motorway slip roads. My husband nearly crashed the car. again, which annoyed me. I said to him, you always say to me that you like women with a bit of meat on them. And he said, I didn't say that. What I actually said was that I liked women putting bits of meat on them. Like Lady Gaga. Now, there's a difference, right, between being offended and being annoyed. We feminists have to pick our battles wisely because sometimes, right, when we say we're offended, what we really mean is that we're just annoyed. For example, Jeremy Clarkson's market-driven misogyny doesn't offend me. It annoys me because it's not genuine. I've seen him on the telly with his mum. He's clearly lovely. And it's important that feminists make the distinction between offence and annoyance. We don't want to muddy the waters when it comes to the real issues. Otherwise, we'll end up like the boy who cried Virginia Woolf. You know, Richard Burton. Anyway, thank you, ladies, for being so bold. It's so nice to see so many of you with the self-confidence not to have had anything enhanced, reduced or resurfaced, because this is the new fight, women, and one that even Charles Darwin didn't see coming. The evolution of cosmetic surgery, or as I like to call it, the descent of woman. Women now have more power and money and opportunity than ever before. So how did we end up a generation of women crippled with self-loathing, eating disorders, body dysmorphia and agitated mons pubis? Something has gone... The women are laughing. The men look really confused. Something has gone badly wrong when hundreds of thousands of British women have chosen to walk around with silicone in their mammaries. Yes, we have the vote, but we can't get ourselves down to the polling stations because we're incapacitated by malnutrition, low self-esteem and vajazzle adhesive. The language of cosmetic surgery is very off-putting, isn't it? It's so rudimentary and dehumanising. I was watching Katie Price talking once. When Katie Price talks, she has this strange, hypnotising effect on me. And once I start watching her, I can't stop. It's like watching a dancing turd. What it represents is horrible, yet the dancing actually makes it quite endearing and sweet. Anyway, Katie was describing all these intrusive, risky, painful cosmetic procedures that she'd had done. But because she always speaks in this flat, monotonous way, regardless of the subject matter, she always sounds like she's ordering a pizza. I hope she never has to give evidence in a murder trial. It would really upset the victim's family. They'd think she was being sarcastic. Anyway, she was saying she'd had a wonky bit straightened out, some cracks filled in, and the area near the downstairs toilet resurfaced. I didn't know whether she was talking about her face or her patio. I've got two kids. Right? My body doesn't need to be perfect, right? It just needs to work. And as long as I can pick up my children, throw them into a bin and run away really quickly... That's all that matters. And I can't do that with enormous silicone-filled breasts, bound feet, or a convalescing labia. So I'm fine with my body, thank you. And I'm fine with nudity, even though I'm a Catholic. What I'm not so comfortable with is up-close nudity with a stranger, like when I was given a lap dance by Peter Stringfellow. Peter Stringfellow didn't personally give me a lap dance. That would have been very awkward, especially if his mullet got caught in my rosary beads. But he was sat opposite me at the time, eating a steak and laughing at me. It doesn't sound good, does it, Fred? It sounds like as well as paying for a lap dance, I also paid for Peter Stringfellow to watch me having one. Not only that, I made him his tea as well. Basically... I'd been invited to dinner by Peter Stringfellow, along with some female colleagues from work. And I used to work on a gossip column, and you get invited to all sorts of places when you work for a newspaper, free publicity and all that. I mean, during my time there, I'd been inside London's most exclusive private members' clubs, art galleries and celebrities' dustbins. But Peter Stringfellow arranged for us all to have individual lap dances as a treat at the end of the meal. Right? But to be honest with you, after eating a massive spicy fish... I'd have been much happier with some sorbet. You know Peter Stringfellow, don't you? He's sort of 1980s looking. He's got a mullet, funny teeth and pointy ears. He looks like the result of a one-night stand between Nosferatu, you know, the vampire, and Carol Thatcher. You know, the vampire. I didn't like having a row of women lined up in front of me at the end of my meal. It was like being presented with a human cheese board. And none of them were from Gloucester or Cheddar. I said to Peter, but I'd normally go for a more mature type, you know, or a blue-veined one. Anyway, I didn't want a lap dance, right? I don't like anyone performing just for me. I find it very intimidating. That clown on my fifth birthday was bad enough. And he wasn't even naked. Or on my lap. And Peter Stringfellow wasn't watching me. My parents wouldn't have invited Peter Stringfellow to my fifth birthday party, even in the 70s. Plus, I'm a Catholic, so there's all sorts of issues to do with sex and nudity going on there. Oh, can I just say here that the food in Stringfellow's is absolutely fantastic. I mean, it's much better than it needs to be. I was expecting, you know, chicken nuggets or scampi. Definitely something in a basket. And a slush puppy in a raffia holder. I'd had a whole Dover sole, which still had its head on, by the way. If I'm ever eating a fish with its head on, I always cover its eyes with a napkin. I think my napkin had even been ironed. Peter Stringfellow's napkins were smarter than I was. And you don't expect that in a lap dancing club, do you? If you ask me, Peter Stringfellow is missing a trick here. He needs to look at his marketing.
Deliciously prepared, sustainably sourced, Lochmuir Scottish salmon, laundered napkins, proper cutlery, and a vagina.
It would open up the club to a whole new demographic. I remember looking at my perfectly folded, bleached white napkin, tucked firmly under my plate next to a glass of clean, fresh water. And suddenly thinking that I wished NHS hospitals had the same high standards of cleanliness and care as Stringfellow's lap dancing club. Anyway, as I was saying, I always cover a fish's eyes when I'm eating it, right? But you can't put a napkin over a fish's eyes in a lap dancing club because that looks like a statement. It looks like you're trying to protect the fish's innocence. It's not really lap dancing club etiquette to cover a dead fish's eyes. So I spent the whole meal trying to avoid eye contact with my fish, or Michael, as I called him. And then I had to do it all over again with my lap dancer, who also made me feel guilty, and who I also named Michael. I didn't even realise we'd be in Peter Stringfellow's club, right? I assumed we'd be upstairs in his flat, where he lives above the club, right? Looking at photographs of lions, Conservative prime ministers, and close-ups of other men's mullets. The problem is that some feminists believe that the sex industry can be empowering to women, right? And other feminists don't, right? And I can see both sides of the argument, depending on which feminists I'm out with at the time. Some of them can be very intimidating. You know, right, when all the feminists meet up for a girls' night out, all we talk about is the sex industry, hegemonic epistemology and feminist discourse, and the former Minister for Women and Equalities, Maria Miller's, shoes. And talking about hegemonic epistemology and feminist discourse after you've had two glasses of white wine spritzers is quite a challenge. Now, what annoys me about the sex industry, and particularly prostitution, is the way people often talk about it, using tired old hoary clichés. It's the oldest profession in the world. Well, it's not, actually. The oldest profession in the world is hunter-gathering, followed by subsistence farming, followed by web design. The other problem is that at some point, every movement needs a leader, and the one thing feminists do not take kindly to is being told what to do, especially by other feminists. It's going to have to be a man, I'm afraid. I nominate James May, Mr. Motivator, or Handy Andy from Changing Rooms. Plus, it doesn't make economic sense for a woman to be the leader of the feminists. Leadership takes time and commitment, and after childcare and expenses, it just doesn't add up for a woman to do it. She's better off staying at home and filling out the feminist leadership application form for her husband. And ironically, the only women who are able to put the time and effort in to fight for equal pay and affordable childcare are women with independent wealth and no children. Anyway, going back to the empowerment argument, my lap dancer didn't seem very empowered to me. For a start, She had to be picked by me, the client. And that made me feel a little bit like a cotton plantation owner. And lap dancing is just one aspect of the sex industry. They also have porn. Now, I'm not a Puritan, but my problem with porn is just that it's too easily accessible. Children can find it by accident online and there's too much sex in it. Where's the jeopardy, the suspense? You always know where porn is going to end. In sex. I don't find porn exciting at all. I tell you a porn film I'd like to see, one with no sex in it. Personally, I'm excited by roller coasters, Civil War reenactment society events, and waterproof jackets. I've got about 13 rain jackets in all different colours. If only there were some way of combining porn with all my favourite things. Sorry, Fred. I wrote a porn sketch but because it was for radio, but I forgot that I was going to have to do it in front of a live audience. So I'm going to do it behind the curtain because it's embarrassing, and I'm going to leave you here on your own to do the men's bit in front of the live audience. Because I can't, I'm sorry, I didn't think it... Is that all right with you?
Yeah, I'll give it a go.
Okay. Yep. I'm really sorry, but there's parents from my school in tonight.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, I'm ready! Hey, Fred. Is that a Berghaus or a North Face jacket you're wearing? I can't see the label.
It's a Berghaus, Bridget.
Call me Lord General Bridget, Fred, yeah? I'm the Lord General, in charge of all the Civil War armies. Try not to make another mistake, Fred. We don't have much time for this sketch. And as you well know, a woman needs 16 minutes to reach the summit.
Sorry, yeah, it's a Berghaus Lord General Bridget.
Oh, God.
It features an elasticated adjustable hem draw cord and an adjustable hook and loop closed cuffs. Plus, there's two external pockets and an internal zip pocket to allow you to keep your essentials safe, secure, and close to hand.
Oh, God, not yet. It's not... Gore-Tex, is it, Fred?
Yes. It is.
Oh, God.
And did you know, Lord General, commander of all the armies, that both wear and cleaning will reduce the performance of Gore-Tex clothes by wearing away the durable water repellent, DWR, treatment on the surface of the fabric?
God, go on!
The DWR prevents the face fabric from becoming wet and thus reducing breathability.
Breathability?
Yes.
Oh, God!
However, the DWR is not responsible for the jacket being waterproof. This is a common misconception. So when the face fabric becomes soaked due to an absence of DWR, there's no breathability, and the wearer's sweat will cause condensation to form inside the jacket.
What happens to the material then, Fred?
This may give the appearance that a jacket is leaking when it's not. The DWR can be reinvigorated by tumble drying the garment or ironing on a low setting.
Oh, you properly equipped bastard!
Good, here comes the rest of Colonel Richard Baggett's regiment of foot.
Oh, where?
There,
where?
Look. Oh. They're getting off the Nemesis roller coaster.
Oh,
they seem a bit wobbly. Bridget, I think they're wearing Berghaus as well.
I'm stopping this sketch right now, Fred. I'm coming out. That is the single most humiliating, embarrassing... I feel sick. This isn't in the script. I feel actually sick to my stomach. My dad has told all his friends to listen in. I don't even make these noises at home. It's not me at all. I'm a silent in the dark. Oh, I feel sick. I wrote it without thinking that anyway, I'm really sorry. And also, my husband might tune into this at some point. He'll be really confused.
Well, if it's any consolation, I enjoyed it.
I'm really sorry, Dad. He's really Catholic. Anyway, sex is used to sell everything now, isn't it? Especially sex. But porn is at the extreme end of making money out of women's bodies, and at the other end is UPVC windows. But why is there a woman next to a window frame? Anyway, even before advertising began, they used sex to advertise advertising. But the problem is the images of women are becoming more and more explicit now. I mean, just a normal women's magazine will have a photograph of a semi-naked woman on the front in a pair of tiny patriotic knickers bending over and looking shocked. Now, those magazines should be on the top shelf, not in with Scooby-Doo and Doctor Who magazines. I don't want to see women portrayed like that, and I don't want my children to see them either. I want my children to see monsters and zombies. Dead people, you know? Fully, properly dead. Not just dead behind the eyes. But we're bombarded by these images, often airbrushed images, and it's this commodification of women's bodies as objects, as highly sexualized objects, that contributes to women's poor relationship with their bodies. 90% of British women feel body image anxiety. 90%! Which makes me wonder, who are the other 10? So what are we doing to make ourselves feel better? How are we using our freedom and opportunity and money? Well, we've set to work on ourselves. That's what we've done. Slicing ourselves up like a Toby Carvery in Solihull, hoping to cater to everyone's tastes. We stick things on, tuck other bits in, get hair extensions and have other hair removed. We lie under lamps to be darker and bleach ourselves to be lighter. We enhance our breasts and reduce our breasts. We freeze our foreheads and fill our lips. And we remove ribs and then put them back in again because fashion's changed. We used to bind our own feet and paint our faces with mercury. Now we hajazzle our mons pubis, and if we work in musical theatre and have hairy hands, we hajazzle our hands too. And we think we're doing all this for man.
But actually, all man really wants is a simple, nourishing meal that includes all 7 key nutrients.
What he's got is experimental cuisine at Heston Blumenthal's Fat Duck. Well, perhaps we need to have all our money taken away from us again.
Like in the good old days.
Yes, thanks, Fred. I saw, by accident, about 5 minutes of The Only Way Is Essex. Right, you might know it as TOWIE. And in those 5 minutes, two young girls were talking about going to a quiz night that one of their friends had organised. And this is how the conversation went. Should we go to the quiz night then? Ellie's organised it.
Oh, actually, do you want me to try and sound like a young girl for this?
Oh, yeah, that would be great, thanks. Yeah. I'll start again, yeah. Should we go to the quiz night then? Ellie's organised it.
Yeah, let's go. It sounds fun. What we'll do is we'll get our Botox done and then go there straight afterwards.
Sorry, for a quiz night? Young pretty girls are having botulinum toxin that can cause botulism, a life-threatening illness, to answer some trivia. Have I been in a coma? I don't even put my shoes on to go to my local quiz night. I just wander around in my slippers. It doesn't even make any sense to me. It doesn't make any logical sense. They weren't playing poker. But I'm really worried about the normalisation of cosmetic surgery. How will my 2-year-old daughter be getting ready for a karaoke night in 15 years' time? By having a labia minora reduction party. In case you don't know, this procedure is the surgical trimming of ladies' bits so that they look like porn stars' bits, which don't look like normal real women's bits. Even M&S normal real women don't have bits like that. I'm not very comfortable talking about down there, I have to tell you. It's partly because I'm a Catholic. You know, most parents say to their children, don't look directly at the sun because you'll go blind. Well, ours said that to us, but about our genitals, OK? It's OK, though, because Naomi Wolf and Catelyn Moran like talking about theirs at any given opportunity, so that relieves me of the obligation. Well, I hear Naomi Wolf's vagina is even doing its own book tour. They're not my style, modern ladies' bits. As I said, I'm more into the Civil War and waterproof jackets. But it's not just vaginas, though. I don't like modern houses either. I don't like them. I think they're both bad examples of streamlined interior design. I go into other people's houses now and the female changing area of my local pool and I think, where's all your stuff? Where is everything? Where's all your books and CDs and labia minoras? You've decluttered your vaginas. The problem is, what's going to happen when this trimmed, clean line look isn't in anymore and you want all your original fixtures and natural character put back in? There isn't going to be reclamation yards full of discarded labia that you can pick up for a fiver and just weld back on. You have to stop out. But why don't these vaginas stand up for themselves? Why do they allow themselves to be demeaned in this way? Like those inside-out cats you can get with no hair. It's just not natural. Anyway, when I explained all this surgical trimming and shaving to my husband, he said, "Oh, so that's why the vaginas that you see nowadays aren't like the ones in the 70s. I said, "What do you mean? Nowadays. What vaginas are you looking at nowadays? Not mine, certainly." He said, "Oh, you know, just ones that are about." "About," I said. "Just ones that are about." "About where? You only go to the post office, free jazz improvising gigs and Neolithic burial chambers. Where are all these random modern vaginas that are just about?" Anyway, that was our anniversary ruined. And the people on the next table asked to be moved. So why do we need to take control of our bodies? Well, here's why. Surveys and polls consistently prove that women would rather lose weight than achieve any other goal in life. 40,000 women had cosmetic surgery in 2001. This figure does not include lunchtime procedures such as Botox. Half of women aged 16 to 21 would consider cosmetic surgery. Demand for cosmetic vaginal surgery has increased fivefold in the last 10 years. A third of women would have surgery to change their body shape, and 30% of female students would be prepared to die younger for a perfect body. You can't legislate against designer vaginas, but we can highlight them. It takes a bit longer because you have to use special dyes. But it's worth it to get an even skin tone. If we don't start valuing ourselves as more than just a commodity and basing all our happiness and success on how we look, all the progress we've made will be a complete waste of time. What's the point in holding up a mirror to female oppression if we can't even look in it ourselves without our makeup on? Thank you and good night.
And there'll be more from Bridget at the same time next week.
This is the BBC Radio 4 Extra Comedy Club.
Well, lucky you.
Well, I'm delighted to say that I'm joined for the second night in a row on the Comedy Club by the amazing comedy writer and performer Sharon Horgan. Sharon, hello again.
Hi.
Skip the pleasantries, I'm fine. So, yesterday we were talking about your kind of way into the business. You met Dennis Kelly, and Dennis was a playwright, I believe, at the time, and you wrote a sketch, and it won an award, and of course you've gone on and done the amazing things you've done, Dennis.